That Sober Guy podcast contains adult content, merciless truth, and emotional nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm Shane Ramey. You're listening to That Sober Guy podcast, and we help people stay sober. If it's your first time listening, welcome. I'm so glad that you're here today. If you're looking to quit or cut back on your drinking, we have one of the best 30-day alcohol-free challenges out there. It's helped hundreds of men all over the country quit drinking, become better fathers, better husbands, better leaders in their community, entrepreneurship, all that good stuff. You can sign up today, and you can check out all of our other podcasts and resources by going to thatsoberguy.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at thatsoberguypodcast. Our guest today, my friend Arlena Allen, and Arlena is a certified recovery coach, certified hypnotist, the founder of Sober Life School, and the host of the award-winning podcast, One Day at a Time. And Arlena, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm well. So good to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you too.
You are so professional, man. You are smooth.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I've done a couple of these before, you know.
like a decade worth of
podcasts. Yeah, I know. It's crazy, huh? I know I said that on the last podcast. On the, I think it's the 26th coming up, will be the 10-year anniversary of the first Sober Guy podcast that we launched. So yeah, it's pretty cool. Wild. Yeah, it's pretty crazy too.
Dude, it was so funny when I started my podcast ages ago, 8 years ago. I had reached out to you and you were so encouraging, and I didn't know anything about intros and stuff, and I totally like ripped off a version of
yours. Oh, I love it. It was so fun. Yeah. That's how we all learn, you know? Yeah.
I forgot what it was. But if you go back in the archives to the first, and it used to be called ODAT chat. And then I realized nobody outside of recovery knows what ODAT means.
Yeah. So search results might be a little difficult there. Yeah. So you just changed it to One Day at a Time. You just spelled it out after that.
Yeah. The One Day at a Time recovery podcast. Yeah. And it's a little, yeah.
How many episodes do you guys have now?
No, it's like I'm publishing 316, 317
now. Nice. Yeah, talking
to wasn't super consistent. Yeah, in the beginning.
Yeah, little ups and downs here and there. I've done that too.
Doing it all. Yeah. So you do all your own editing and stuff, right?
I do, and I try. Like we were talking about this before I hit record. Actually, like I try not to do, you know, limited editing. Like I record everything in live format, but basically at the end, yeah, I don't. Like I remember the first couple of podcasts I did, or probably the first 100, like I would go in and like edit out every and like, oh man, it took hours, like hours of editing. Ow. And I guess that got me good at it. But then eventually I just started producing the show like in a more of a live format. And so it did two things. Obviously the first goal was to cut back on all the editing hours. So now it's just like record and then I could basically upload it to Libsyn and push it out. And then also what it did over the long term is actually made me a better host too, because I wasn't worried so much about having to go in and do all that. You know, I just wanted to hit it in one time, and occasionally I have to go in and do it. But it's nice to have that system down where I don't have to put a ton of hours in like back in the day. It was so crazy.
You got to simplify for longevity. Yeah,
totally.
So I ended up getting somebody to help me a few years into it. So that's been super helpful.
I love that. And I think that I like what you said too, the simplify. I like to really try to apply that to every aspect of my life that I can. So like staying sober, you know, staying healthy, like spiritually, physically, mentally, just trying to keep it simple, because I overcomplicate the crap out of stuff if I'm like, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us do that.
From another mother.
Yeah. It's so, you know, I mean, we get in our heads, we start, oh man. And then it's just like, before you know it, you're like, I don't even know what I'm doing right now. Like, let's get back to the basics, you know, sunlight, protein, take a walk, maybe lift some weights. You know what I'm saying? Like communicate. And then, you know, we can keep it simple in that aspect.
Yeah. We'll settle down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what else has been going on? I know you're working on a lot of different, or a few different things. You're working on a book, Like, yeah, tell us what's been going on with the podcast and like how's things been with yourself, and you've been talking to some good people, and what's going down?
Yeah, gosh. So a lot has changed since I chatted with you last time. You know, probably first and foremost, one of the biggest things that I've added into my coaching practice was hypnosis. And I was telling you before we jumped on that I had a pretty intense story. So I decided to do hypnosis because I went to this gal and I was like, you know what? I've been trying to write this book forever. I seem to be blocked internally. It must be a confidence issue or something. So I was like, hey, I talked to this lady and I'm all about neuroscience and the subconscious mind and all that stuff. Love me some Dr. Joe Dispenza, you know, nice. Kind of pre-program, pre-program my brain. So I went to this gal and for some hypnosis, I tried every kind of therapy and this was so amazing. So I go to her and what ended coming up for me was I needed to process my father's death. Like my father had gotten sick and he passed away. And I was actually like, I thought I was at peace with it. Right. Like, cause he had been, so I was kind of relieved for him when he passed. But I was like all blocked inside, but isn't that how it is? Like we think like with alcohol, we think it's the drinking that's the problem. Yeah. And then you get sober and it's like, no, it's all this other stuff that was beneath the surface that was compelling you to drink. That was the problem. Right. So often the solution is something that seemed totally unrelated. So I had such a powerful experience doing the hypnosis thing. I processed my father's death and it was such a trippy experience because the next day I couldn't even get out of bed. Like I just emotionally purged and it was a really intense experience, but it left me feeling freer after that. And I forget what the time period was, but, you know, fast forward about a year and a half, my mother gets this terminal cancer diagnosis. She had been having some neck pain and she had like this little lump on the back of her neck and nobody knew what it was. And finally, the doctors were kind of dragging their feet. And finally she went to get an MRI and it was cancer and they had done some scans. And so I went and, you know, to see her in the hospital and she was like in pretty good spirits and kind of hopeful. And I got her all settled in into the big hospital. And when I gotten home, the doctor called me to say that they had reviewed the scans from her chest and abdomen. And she was completely riddled with cancer.
Oh, wow.
And it was stage four terminal. There was nothing to be done about it. And, you know, she was so brave. She was like the most positive person I've ever met in my entire life. And she wasn't afraid. Thank God. She was like, yeah, I just hope it goes quick. And from diagnosis to death was about 22 days.
Dang, 22 days. Wow.
Yeah, it was rough. Wow. As soon as we found out, you know, we got a hospital bed for her home and I got it like an inflatable mattress and slept next to her, for the duration. And thank God I was sober because I was having to manage all her medications. We're talking liquid morphine, lorazepam, some other kinds of drugs. I don't really remember now. That whole period was kind of fuzzy for me. But pretty early on, she just like decided to stop eating. Like as soon as we got all the legal stuff taken care of, she was in the process of getting her will done. What a God thing that was. It just so happened. You know what I mean? I had to like drive her to the attorney's office and they came out and she signed the papers in the car. Everything just happened so fast. But my aunt came up. My aunt was living in Mexico City and she came up and she kept asking me, she goes, you do hypnosis, right? And I'm like, yeah. She goes, maybe you can help your mother transition. And I was like, yeah, definitely. But it wasn't like, let's do it now. It wasn't anything like that. And towards the end, she was having, I could tell she was like gone. Like she wasn't awake anymore. And, her breathing was really labored and raspy.
Yeah.
And my aunt asked me again, she said, will you do hypnosis with your mom and help her to transition? And I was like, yeah. She goes, okay, we'll leave. And I was like, oh, you mean right now? So I was like, oh shit. You know, she, you know, everybody left the room and it was just me and my mom. And it was November 3rd. It was like a crisp fall morning. And just to set the stage, it was, you know, the sun was coming in through the window, shining on her face. And right outside her window was like a lake. and there were geese on it, you know, like in those early morning hours, like when there's like smoke on the water. It was beautiful. So I start doing the hypnosis thing, and you, typically there's a script that you can read to induce somebody. And I was going to start reading it. And I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to speak from my heart. I put on some beautiful music and I just started talking to her, like, separating her body from her spirit. Like, your spirit is getting lighter and lighter and your body is getting heavier and heavier. And, there's nothing left for you to do here. Everybody here is safe. Your family is loved and safe and taken care of. And, I just kept talking to her and I said, your breathing is getting slower and slower. Your heart is stopping. And at one point I opened my eyes and it was working. Like, her breathing had totally changed. Like, it was working. And I was like, oh my God. So I just kept going. And it was so interesting because at one point I heard the geese lift off the water. And when I opened my eyes, she was gone.
Oh, wow.
Damn. And it was, I got to tell you, Shane, it was probably like one of the most precious moments of my life because it was just me and her. You know, she was the one that brought me into the world and I got to be the one to lead her out. And it was a beautiful experience. And it's, you know, the hypnosis is so powerful and it's, you know, it's things that you can heal without drugs. You know, you do pain management and, you know, you and I have been sober for a long time, but you know, we see people who struggle with like character defects and stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is just such a beautiful process. It's really gentle to help people sort of let go of some of those things that compel the character defects.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that story too with your mom. And obviously very sorry that, you know, you lost your mom and then that you like at the same time, I even sense some gratitude that you got to be there and were able to, you know, experience that with her too, at the same time, as hard as it is, as it was and is, I'm sure. And so did you said that was your sister that had mentioned to you about doing that or your aunt?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Named after my aunt.
Yeah.
And so relieved. Yeah.
So what, and your aunt was there too at that time or whatever, or the family?
She was in the next room. Yeah. She had asked me, she was, so stressed. I mean, we both were because it was in the end stages. I've never been around somebody that had gone through that before. And, the end is stressful in the sense that, you know, she was out, like she was on a lot of pain medication.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure.
The one thing she asked me for, Shane, was that she didn't want to feel pain. And I was like, I got you.
Yeah.
I got you. And there was so much to be grateful for. I mean, I'm so glad I was sober through that whole experience. I would have missed out on so much. Like, I had the opportunity to call her friends and let them know what happened. And I listened to her say goodbye to her friends. Like a lot of times people don't get the chance to say goodbye.
Yeah.
She got to say goodbye. And what was the only thing that was important at the end was that they loved each other, that they spent time together sharing laughs and sharing sorrows. And at the end, that was all that mattered.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
I love that you pointed that out. I think about that often. And I know I've talked about on the podcast before, like I've heard people complaining about stuff or saying, and I'm even guilty of it myself too. But at the end of the day, I just look at him and go, hey, you're going to die one day. Is it really that big of a deal? I know it's like sounds insensitive and some people are like, what? But we don't look at death in the Western culture the same as a lot of other cultures. And if you study a little bit of that, I'm not by far an expert on it or anything, but like, I'm very conscious of the fact that I'm going to pass on one day. And so the little things that used to bug the crap out of me or like get to me, they're not as big of a deal as they used to be because I know just what you said is true. Like the most important thing is my family, my friends, being in the moment with them and spending that time together. Like no one's going to say at the end of the day, like when I die or my grave, so like he was the hardest worker I knew and the greatest podcaster. Like I don't care. Like none of that means anything really at the end of the day, you know? And so I think keeping that in
not the podcasting. Oh shit.
I don't know. Who knows?
Come on, man. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But like for me, like the most important thing is to your point, like you said, your mom and her friends, like the friendship, the time we spend together, the great memories, the laughs, like as cheesy even as some of that sounds, or like, yeah, you know, we gotta live life. Like I get it. But at the end of the day, I remember Seth telling me this, like, is it really that big of a deal? It's like, and I have his, him in my head sometimes, step back, is it really that big of a deal? Nah, 9 times out of 10, it's really not, you know?
Yeah, someone told me, if I'm stressing over something, just think about, is this going to matter in 10 years? Like, yeah. Can you remember what you were stressing out about 10 years ago? And I'm like, yep. not one thing. Nah,
we don't really remember. And, you know, the other side of that is God always seems to find a way to work it out. It might not be exactly how I expect it to be or exactly what I thought it should be. But my wife and I talk about that often. Like it's always worked out one way or another, you know? So having that trust and that faith and being able to kind of sit in that and just alleviate, you know, some of that stress and stuff is definitely great. And I think it goes to your point, like of you were so glad you're sober during that experience. Like you got to feel, you got to experience that. You got to go through it as hard as it was. You know, you're very conscious in that state.
You know, what's funny is the drug addict in me is alive and well. Cause I was like, liquid morphine, huh? I was like, wonder what that's like.
Yes.
And it was like, down girl. Yeah. No.
Well, do you think when you think about that, or when you had that thought, was it more of a thought of like just wanting to escape like the feelings and just kind of float away? Or is it more just like more novelty kind of, oh, that looks kind of good. I'm just kind of curious.
I don't even know. Cause there were pills in the beginning, and then at some point she couldn't swallow anymore. So we went to liquid. Mm. So I had all kinds of pills. I loved all drugs. Yeah. I didn't do heroin cause I saw too many after school specials. I thought it would immediately lead to prostitution. So I'm scared.
I don't want to be a hooker. I'm staying away from the heroin.
Yeah, staying away from the heroin.
Oh man,
it's not a good look for me.
Yeah.
But it was funny. It was like a passing thought. It was like, huh? I wonder what that was. But it was immediately like, oh, funny.
Yeah.
That thought is still there. It was like, oh, look at that. That's weird. That thought is still there. But I had a knee surgery one time and some other things where I've had to have pain meds and been very like controlled. Like I had somebody else manage my husband managed my pain meds. And then, you know, he would always wean me off. I always felt it was too early.
You're like, wait, I'm not done yet. I'm not done.
Wait a minute. Are you sure?
Yeah.
One more. No. But then we would throw them away. But there was all these weird little thoughts that my mind has like, oh gosh, I could probably sell those.
Oh wow. Yeah. You go right back to that.
Huh? I never sold pills. There's never enough for me. I'm not going to stop. Yeah. But anyway, it was just
Arlena, the entrepreneur, was coming out, you know, even in the pills. That's funny.
Right?
I just had my first experience with that. Like, I had a minor surgery on my jaw where they had to go in and like extract the tooth and like do some work in my gums. Yeah. And it was, and like, they had to put me out for it. And so I didn't really know, like, I knew I was going to go out for it. I knew Jess was going to have to like drive me home and she was going to be there and stuff. But I was trying to like not pay too much attention to it, just go do it. Cause everyone hates the dentist anyways. And, so I go there and I'm like sitting in the chair and they're like prepping me and getting ready. And they put like a little IV stint in my arm. And I'm like, dude, what is going on? I'm like, what do you give me on this? And she's like, well, it's like a small amount of fentanyl and something else. And I'm like, I was like shocked. I was like, really? I was like, all right. Like, okay.
That's actually what it's for.
Exactly. Yeah. For surgery. Exactly. That's the proper, I guess, use for it, you know, like that. And so long story short, everything went smooth. I didn't even remember anything of it. Like I thought I was still talking to the person and it was done. You know, but man, I was like, they had to wheel my ass out in a wheelchair. Like, and like, I'm saying all this crazy funny stuff. And yeah, it was insane. And I'm very happy that I don't have to, rely on that stuff, obviously, but it's definitely different when, you know, you're doing it for what it's supposed to do. Yeah. And when you're sober. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny because we forget that those drugs have like an intended use, like a legitimate.
Yeah. There's actually a purpose. Use. Yeah. Other than just.
Yeah. Like I always feel super guilty. I remember I got in a wakeboarding accident, I guess. Or hit the water too hard with my face.
Oh, face plant. Ouch.
Yeah. And, I passed out, like they hauled me into the boat just in time for me to pass out. And, they took me to the hospital. I was, displaying some concerning signs. And, so my head hurt. And so they put a line in me and this lady was going to give me something. And I'm like, what is that? And just before she hit the plunger, she goes, oh, this is fentanyl. This is what drug addicts like.
Oh, shoot. Dang.
I was too late.
Yeah.
It was like balloon had popped and I was high AF.
I'm sure your face felt much better though in that moment. That's one good thing. Because that probably didn't feel great. Dang.
Yeah, but that was the intended purpose. But it was a little scary because I hadn't prepared for it. You know, like if you have surgery, you can prepare for it and get mentally psyched out, make sure that you have proper support and you pray your ass off before and after. Yeah. You know what I mean? So when it's unexpected, that was a whole different thing. But so far so good. And I'm celebrating anniversary this year. Did I tell you?
No.
This month I'll be 30 years sober.
Dang, congratulations. That's freaking awesome.
That's a nice round number, huh?
Yeah, 30 of them. Dang.
30 in a row.
That is so, let's kind of, on that note, that's such a great accomplishment and just something to celebrate for sure. Just for those out there who are just hearing you for the first time, maybe they want to check out your podcast. Definitely encourage you that. We'll put all the links from everything in the show notes today. Can you give us like the 2-minute version of just like, of like your story, just so folks kind of know like where you were at and then like where you're at today.
Sure. Yeah, no, I can do this quick. So my parents are super nice people. My mother was born and raised in Mexico City and daddy is from Kentucky. So I have a little southern accent for no reason.
Yeah.
Grew up in California.
That's funny.
But they were really nice people, right? Like I grew up in the church. I never saw my parents drink or use or anything like that. Super straight lace, uber like goody two shoe family. Mm. But there was a couple of things that happened to me when I was really young. I was sexually abused by a neighbor when I was starting at the age of 5 and my parents divorced when I was 7. And those, there's something called the ACEs score, the adverse childhood experiences. So you can take this quiz. And if you have, I forget what the number is, if you have like 4 or more, you were like 90% chance of developing some sort of addiction as an adult. And so I aced that score, got an 8 on that test. But it was like, so all these things that happened to me when I was young did something to my self-esteem and my sense of self-worth. And although I was like raised in the church, I didn't get the whole point of Jesus was forgiveness and acceptance. I kind of missed that part. I kind of got the messages that I was broken and I had evidence to prove it, right? Like the things that happened to me sort of proved and reinforced this idea that there was something wrong with me. And that's kind of how I moved through life. And then when I had my first drink before I was 10 years old, and I don't know how old, because I know my mom and my stepdad when I was 10. He gave me my first journal, but she had gone out to dinner sometime before that, left me and my older sister home alone. And that's when I had my first drink. And I remember like the, when you, just before you do something naughty, you get like all excited and, you got the anticipation and it's sort of like exciting. You're going to do something bad. So it was just me and my sister. And she was like the straight A student. She was the compliant child. Mm. I was not. So, but I remember that first drink, I was all excited to do it. Then I drank it and it burned my lips and then burned all the way down. But then when it hit bottom, like that warmth spread through my whole body. Yeah. And I didn't realize how bad I felt until I felt good, because all the self-loathing and self-consciousness, and really it was self-hatred by the time I was 10, when all that was lifted, all that was left was this good feeling. And the juxtaposition between those two feelings was so intense, like that stark contrast that like burned in my psyche forever as this is the solution.
Really?
This is what's going to help me feel better. And so obviously I wasn't a daily drinker at 10, but from, you know, it was pretty regular from the time I was 14 till I was 25. I had my last drink on my 25th birthday and smoked weed for another 5 months. I thought I was over. Yeah. Then I went to a 12-step program and they were like, oh, you can't really count your time until you quit everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was between the first drink and the last was a series of what I called episodes where I would drink. And then like, who knew? I never knew who was going to come out. Like I had these alter egos. I was either like Wimpy Wendy or Badass Betsy, cause I was either fighting or crying. And then later in life, I realized that I had a third personality and that was Slutty Karen. she would always show up to the party and everybody loved her. Oh, like literally. No.
Yeah.
Dang. I used to joke around that my tagline, if I could sum up my entire drinking and using experience, was that if it was in a bottle, a bag, or blue jeans, I was doing it.
Got it. Okay. So you were partying. You were partying. Arlena was partying. Yeah.
I was fun. I was a fun girl most of the time.
Yeah.
But not all the time. And I just, you know, the truth of the matter was I hated who I was and I didn't have any emotion management skills.
Yeah.
And I just crashed and burned early. By the time I was 25, I was like, I cannot do this any longer. And through a series of events, I met people who were in the program that, you know, were breaking off little chunks of wisdom in ways that I could hear it. Like, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. And there is a solution. And I used to be like that. And now I don't have to do that anymore. Now my life is beautiful. And I could see that their lives were beautiful. And someone invited me to a meeting and I went and I have never looked back. I jumped in with both feet, did everything they told me to do. And yeah, it's been 30 years.
Yeah. Congratulations. That's freaking awesome.
Was that 2 minutes? That was pretty close.
Yeah. That was perfect. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And I know thanks, that you work with a lot of women too. So like any advice for women out there, obviously everyone's story is a little different. So maybe, you know, maybe someone decided to quit drinking a little later on. Maybe they're deciding that factor right now, you know, in this moment, and they're considering it. Maybe they're having that thought. Like, what do you say to those out there? Any advice, tips, or anything like that?
Yeah, you know what, Shane, I recently created a 30 tips for 30 days guide that you can get for free on my website at soberlifeschool.com, and it's sort of 30 of my best tips. From like to prepare, like you, like if someone comes to me and says, I want to quit, my first question is always, have you decided that you need to practice abstinence? Like, honestly, like,
yeah, that's a great question.
I don't care if the answer is no, I'm not ready. I'm like, great. Run the experiment, run the experiment, drink. Even in the literature of 12 step, they say to, you know, if you're not convinced, go try some controlled drinking.
Yeah.
You know, that's to answer the question of can you moderate? I was pretty clear right in the beginning that I could not, but I was pretty extreme in my behavior. And I work with a lot of women who are successful, right? Who are middle-aged like me. I'm 55, right? So there's a lot of women that are like me. I was a professional. And a lot of people can like run it for a long time in like this okay mode where they don't like, you know, have to go to jail or institutions, you know what I mean? And so like, I would say high bottom, but, there's some things, but that is the thing that you first have to decide is can you moderate? And if you have a plan and you cannot stick to your plan, that is a very good sign. If you black out, that is also a very good sign. If you can't sleep through the night because the alcohol kicks off your cortisone cascade of like hormonal changes in your body and you wake up at 3 a.m. every night, that's a sign of unmanageability.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that way. And the only reason people really drink is because it's still a solution that helps you to change the way you feel. So I just propose that if you have other tools that help you manage the feelings that are compelling you to drink in the first place, you don't actually need the alcohol.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a good point.
So, yeah. And so there, you know, I just have like this little guide that is, you know, very simple about like, how make sure, you know, how to prepare for the witching hour. Like a lot of people go to work during the day and they want to come home and quote unquote relax with a glass of wine, which turns into a bottle, which leads to horrible sleep and shitty mornings and all that stuff. So there's like little tips for managing some of the hardest things, even like how to talk to your friends and family. And that always seems like how to socialize. Like those are all major concerns for the first like 30 to 100 days.
Yeah, those are great questions too that a lot of people have. And so that's cool that you put them all together, and we'll put the link in the show notes once again. So if folks listening want to go check it out, you know, I've still never, and I've said it 100 times probably, I'll say it again. Like I've never heard anybody say my habitual drinking habits have really improved my life. Like I've still yet to hear anybody say that. Like I always see it go the opposite way. It did for me, did for a lot of my friends, a lot of people we talk with on the show. So, the moderation question, I think it does kind of come back to that. You know, are you ready? Like, can you, you know, do you think that's something? And that's the tricky part of it too, is some of us still try to think that we can do it. And I'd be a liar if I said I didn't have that thought even after 10 years. Oh man, well, and man, I wonder if I could just have a beer these days, you know? I wonder if I'd be okay, you know? And so I used to really resist that thought because I felt, you know, I shouldn't have that thought. Like I don't do that. I know I don't want to drink. I know I don't want to go back to that. It's just the thought though, you know? And so I have to acknowledge it and be real with myself about it and say, you know, hey, maybe it's possible that I could, but guess what? I don't even want to give it a shot. So I'm just going to steer clear of it. You know, that's a tough one sometimes.
I see people occasionally, every once in a while, we'll be in like an environment where people are drinking and I'd go, huh, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
They look like they're having fun. Huh? Wouldn't that be nice? But I'm immediately no. Like it's like a full body no. Cause I was that girl I was a puker. I mean, I had no off switch.
Yeah.
Party to you puke? Yeah, what's wrong with that? Like, I used to wake up the next day and be like, if I didn't have splash marks on my shoes the next day, it wasn't a good time. That's how I gauge.
Yeah.
That's how I gauge. Yeah, I was a pretty heavy drinker. Like, I'm small. I'm 5'3", 120 pounds. Yeah. And I was drinking men twice my size under the table.
Just putting it
hard
down.
Hard out. But that's not something to be proud of. I mean, but you know how I see that now? I see that through the lens of empathy and compassion. Like, wow, I was in so much emotional pain that I had no other way of managing my feelings.
Yeah.
Like, I was so dissociated from all the childhood pain and stuff. Like, dissociation is a funny thing because we think, you know, there's that old saying that time heals all wounds. It is such a lie. Time does not heal all wounds. The pain waits. And like you and I kind of grew up in this environment where they talk about resentments being like little pebbles you put in a sack that you throw over your back, you know, and you don't notice them as they go in one at a time, but over a long period of time, that weight will break you. Right. And you don't, and you're like, what is it? Where is this coming from? And we don't realize that we're carrying around all this pain, unresolved pain. We've just dissociated from it out of survival.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And so the whole recovery process for me has been about, you know, taking those little pebbles out one at a time and processing that to resolution. So I'm not, so that I can live free. Like I'm not weighted down by all that stuff.
Yeah. I love that analogy, the pebbles too. Like it's, and they do, they're little, but they add up over time and they become really, really, really heavy and very overwhelming. You mentioned too, you know, managing emotions and managing, feelings and, what are some healthy ways that you're able to manage those feelings from like a woman's perspective today? Any tips for that, for those listening out there too? Like how do you manage just day-to-day emotions and stress and anxiety, just the, you know, just trying to live life. And there's a lot of that if we're not in a good space.
Yeah, I can be. I mean, we're in a weird time. I don't think anyone would argue that. Jeez. And I don't know if it's, so when I first got sober, they told me to call people. People would give me phone. I was like, so what that sort of refers to is a support system, right? Like, and then a self-care practice. Like when I coach women, one of the first things we do is establish a self-care practice. I use something called the 5-minute journal, which I love because it's like three things. Do you know that?
Yeah, I have one actually. I haven't taken it out in a long time. I need to take it, but yeah, that's a good one.
I love it because it's three things you're grateful for, three things that would make the day great. So you're creating a target. It's hard to hit a target, a moving target, right? Like, how do you know your day will be great unless you sort of define what that is? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not subjective once you write it down. It's like, okay, there's the target. And listen, mine are simple some days. Like, if I do my self-care practice, if I can connect with somebody else, if I can be of service, it's, you know, simple things that really would make my day great. And then an affirmation. And lately I've been doing the artist's way. Are you familiar with Julia Cameron's The Artist's Way?
I don't think so.
Oh my God, it's so good. You're a creative. You would totally love it. And I have the book handy here. But she has like this list of things that are God-centered, like an affirmation like, I'm a channel for God's creativity and my work comes to good. Mm. As I create and listen, I will be led. You know, a lot of times we're like looking for guidance. Like, it's like, okay, I don't know. You know, we hear about my will, God's will, self-will, all that stuff. It's like, how do I know I'm following the right track? So when I first start working with someone and I'm asking them to do these things like little gratitude list, you know, set your intention for the day. Like, that's all a morning practice, and then inviting some sort of spiritual practice. I feel like the morning self-care practice is really fundamental. But like when I'm stressed out and like I'm triggered or some sort of fear has been kicked off, the first thing I always did from day one was pick up the phone and call somebody and talk about like, and that's granted, I'm like super self-centered and I love to talk about myself. So that was easy for me.
Yeah. That wasn't hard.
That's funny. But what I found out, like when I ask other women to do that who are not self-centered like me, they're like, oh, I don't want to bother anybody.
Yeah, they feel like they're a bother. Like,
They feel like they're a bother. But what they don't realize is you're giving that other person an opportunity to feel useful.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And as like when someone calls me and shares their pain with me, I go, oh, here, let me be, you know, I want to connect. I want to share what's going on with me too so they don't feel alone. I want to offer empathy and compassion. They're doing me a favor when they call me. Right. And so I try to convey that, like, and that was something that helped me right from the very beginning. I had a sponsor. It was like, you need to call me every day just to check in, just to get into the habit so that when the shit hits the fan, as it will, you're already in the habit of calling. It's that saying that we don't rise to the level of our expectations. We fall to the level of our training.
Right.
So if you train yourself to reach out when you're in pain, you will already be trained to reach out and connect with somebody else. And for me, that was the process of processing my feelings to resolution.
Yeah, that's good. And it's hard sometimes to reach out. You know, I got this. I don't need, it's not a big deal. You know, I tend to minimize stuff sometimes, which, you know, it can be confusing at times, but I've experienced firsthand too, the fact that when we're helping somebody else, we're inadvertently helping ourselves, and it works. Like, I've seen it work. I've felt it. I've seen others do it. And so you're so right on that. Like, when we get to do that and have opportunity to do that, you know, it works out. God works it out. Like, we feel like, okay, I don't have like my friend Buddy, he'd always tell me that too. Hey, you know, if you're struggling with, let's say you're struggling in your marriage, go help one of your buddies who's struggling in his marriage too. Like, go talk about it, you know, and that doesn't mean go over there and try to tell them all what to do or whatever, but you get the point. Like, whatever the situation is, you know, there's opportunity there. And then, man, you know, you kind of help yourself in the process.
Yeah. And I have a kind of a shorthand to sort of explain that. And there's this idea that people are just mirrors. They just reflect back to us what we love or hate about ourselves. And what's interesting is like in the realm of recovery, when I'm going through something and I reach out to somebody else, they look at me through this lens of compassion, like they're trying to help me, right? Mm. Like someone calls me and she's stressed out about something that she feels ashamed about, or she did something bad or whatever, something she didn't want to do. I offer her empathy, and by giving her empathy for something, it's like there's this idea that you can't escape the same measuring stick that you judge others by. Mm. So I recognize it in her that she's being dishonest, she's being self-centered, she's being selfish. I can see it because I have it.
Yeah.
And as I give her compassion, I also receive compassion because my rules about my judgment are shifting through this lens of compassion.
Yeah.
Right. So I kind of, the shorthand is, if you spot it, you got it, and offer compassion.
Love it. We got about five minutes. Just want to be conscious of time here, but we didn't even get into the book yet. But like, I know you're working on a book. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, the book is the 12-step guide for skeptics. And the whole point of the book is that there is a lot of myths and misperceptions and some truths about what 12-step is and is not. And, you know, there's a lot of people arguing about a lot of stuff online. You and I have both been doing podcasts for a lot of years. So we talk up to a lot of people who don't do 12-step. And if you ask them why not, I have never heard a reason why not to do it. I haven't heard a good reason not to do it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like the hill I will die on is the process is a worthy endeavor. What I will acknowledge though, is that the steps and the fellowship, like the meetings, the people, those are two separate components. Mm-hmm. And 90% of the problems lie in the realm of the people, because we're kind of people-y. This is a group of people, myself included, who are not in the hotbed of mental health, right? Like we go there because we're not well.
Exactly.
Right. So, but it's an opportunity to practice. It's just an opportunity to practice being a better human, right? Yeah. You're going to bump up against people who rub you the wrong way. And then you get to decide how you want to behave. You get to decide what you, you know, take what you want, leave the rest. Right. But the process itself of the steps is a beautiful, magical process that has helped millions and millions of people, you know, gain access to a higher power as you define it. Like it's not a,
It's not
the only way, but it's a beautiful process. And so that's what I'm trying to do, is just help people get past things like what powerlessness really means. It's over alcoholic, you know, the word alcoholic, people get really hung up on that. There's a way to navigate that. Just trying to help people get to the process and let go of the barriers.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of, misconceptions, stigmas, opinions, all that stuff, which everyone has a right to their opinion. And a lot of the time I hear feedback about, you know, 12 step or whatever. And I mean, there's been multiple times when someone will go this and that and this and that. And then I'm not even trying to be like an asshole or anything. I just say, hey, mind if I ask you something? Well, yeah. Have you ever been to a meeting? Well, nah, but you know, I heard this or, and I'm like, well, yeah, you didn't experience this for yourself. And even that's just going to one meeting, you're not going to get the full experience. Like go to a few. If you don't like them, then you don't like them. That's fine. But like the experience itself is going to vary between different individuals, being, you know, how much you put into it is going to be how much you put out of it. Like even different meetings are different locations, different people, everything is different. And I think at the end of the day, a lot of people arguing and debating, which there's healthy debates for sure. But like, man, are we staying sober? Like that's like the, are we finding a spiritual relationship with God or something higher? Like, those two components, are we finding fellowship? You know, that component, like those are the important things. So like we get lost, I think, in the semantics of it and like the, you know, the debate of it, when really at the end of the day, there's just a couple purposes there. And if we can at least agree on those, then that seems to be helpful. But I also just think people like to argue and try to throw their opinion around, which social media does not help with that these days either. It's like everyone's got an opinion. Everyone's an influencer. Everyone's doing... It's so exhausting sometimes. Look at me now. I'm up on a soapbox. I'm sorry, but gosh.
Listen, I'm with you. But the whole meetings thing, that is separate from the steps still.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Two totally different things.
But there is a safe way to go through the steps with the people. And I love the people. I don't love all the people, but I love the people.
Yeah.
And I have just had such a positive experience. I was in a big city with like 800 meetings a week. Like I had access to a lot of really good meetings. And I realized that that's not the case, but everybody has access to Zoom now.
Yeah.
So that kind of leveled the playing field a little bit.
Yeah. That definitely opened up a lot of different opportunities for people to at least kind of just try a meeting out too, you know, but I got to say there's nothing like being in person, whether, you know, it's just a different dynamic. It's a different experience. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I definitely encourage people, like, if you're scared to, like, just try one out. Maybe go to a different city if you don't want to see anyone you know or something.
Yeah, I went just to a different out, you know? City the first time.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, see, there you go. Arlena's like your that their firsthand experience.
I took like 40 minutes to the
yeah.
45 minutes.
Just didn't want to see anyone, probably.
I was terrified.
Yeah, that's funny.
I forgot that they were there for the same reason.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. We're so judgmental of ourselves, huh? It's like the worst.
And we are.
Yeah. So, where can folks reach out to you? What's the best place to find the podcast? If they want to contact you about any of the work you're doing, where's the best place to do that?
Yeah. If you just go to soberlifeschool.com, that's where the guide, the 30-day guide is. I highly recommend, like, man or woman, you can download it. It's got some very good. It also has links to the podcast. And if you want to do some coaching, hypnosis, to get rid of those character defects that are so hard to resolve. Yeah. They will haunt you forever.
They will. They creep up too when you least expect it, like a ninja.
That's right.
Yeah.
Like a ninja.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast. It's been great to chat with you and really enjoy, you know.
It's so good to catch up with you. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to do it again sometime too. Maybe we can dive
into
it.
You're gonna have to come online.
Let's do it. Yeah, yeah. You gotta send me a date or whatever, and I'd definitely love to do that.
Absolutely.
Thanks for tuning in today. We'll be sure to put all the links in the show notes today once again so you can contact and connect with Arlena. Follow us on Instagram at That Sober Guy Podcast. And man, love you guys. Thanks for tuning in. Peace, love, and respect. Keep your blood clean.